This is not easy. It's not meant to be easy. It's very difficult to master your psychology. It's very difficult and audacious to compete with hundreds of thousands of eager and well-educated financial professionals out there. So it's not easy. Anybody who says it is easy is clueless.
I sent two units. They're bringing her down now.
No, Lieutenant, your men are already dead.
The future is approaching faster than ever.
Technological change is speeding up, and your already maladapted evolutionary mismatches are multiplying.
In the future, the current version of you is already dead. The way around that is to keep learning, keep evolving, mentally, psychologically, physically, and financially.
Hi, this is Future Skills, the show that prepares you for accelerating change in the future. Today, we will provide a crash course for investors, and that includes recommended reading to master both the psychology and mechanics of investing, and pointers regarding how to form and refine a strategy. Remember that you're never done and that investing is not easy, no matter what your get rich quick friend says.
Get rich quicker than a cricket.
maybe you should say that. Anyway, the first and maybe most important thing to remember is that psychology is more important than maths in investing.
This is something that was foreign to me before I met you, actually. I think there were three big things off the top of my mind that I learned about investing or kind of snapped up from around being around you. And that was one. And then the second was to not mistake your own skill with market growth. And then the third was basically the whole feel of randomness and luck. I think those were three very big things, and we're kind of going to go into that today also.
Definitely. I completely agree, of course, and I'm proud that those were the three things you picked up first. And related to this psychology thing, you are your worst enemy. And that says quite a lot, given that this is a very competitive and lucrative field. It's you can even say it's the most competitive and lucrative field known to man.
Yeah, if you're going to look at it in terms of money, what are the two fields that are the most competitive, where you can have the most leverage using your own mind power, just thinking and outthinking other people? That's probably going to be some business dealing with network effects over the internet, or trading and investing.
Yeah, so this is an extremely competitive field. And nevertheless, it's not the competitors that are your worst enemy, it's yourself.
Could you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah, well, it's because we talk a lot about evolutionary mismatches and psychological biases, and they are all in play in trading. It has to do with things like availability bias, selective perception, your own fear and greed, emotions. I mean, you're not even supposed to trade when you are emotional, but when do you think people trade the most? When
of
they're
course,
emotional.
Yeah. And when it's urgent.
Yeah, exactly. And you have this herd psychology, where you are actually supposed to buy when people are fearful and things are cheap and risk is lower, since low price means lower risk, everything else equal. But instead, you tend to buy when others are buying and sell when others are selling. So there are a lot of psychological pitfalls here.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I think one of the most difficult things when it comes to finance, both trading and investing, especially where people overestimate their own skill the most, or their own, you know, degree of being able to think that they're accurate, I think that's to determine whether it's the right price or not, because everyone thinks they know what something is worth.
$750.
Evan.
$1,203.
Everybody's over.
Like what you were saying about, okay, if it's low price, then it's low risk. But then you have to also know that it's low price. And it's very easy to think that you know that it's low price when you're not so sure.
Yeah, and as soon as you start putting numbers into an Excel spreadsheet, for example, then you start believing those numbers. And that's also just your own problem. That has nothing really to do with the numbers or stats or mathematics. It's just you fooling yourself rather than a competitor fooling you.
Right, so there are like several components. First, you got to know how to do it and even know how to determine or like make up a valuation and make a comparison with other assets. And then you also, after you've done that, you also need to know how sure you are, kind of know yourself.
In any case, as we started out saying, psychology is the most important thing. Sure, you still need to do some math and know a little bit of accounting, but you really should be able to do most of your calculations in your head or on the back of a napkin. The rest is really just keeping your emotions in check.
Okay, so that's the first out of these 5 points that we're going to go over today.
Yeah, and the second point, it's about where you should find your information, your inspiration, and build your knowledge base. And that is from real books and insightful articles. Your best sources are definitely not Twitter or Facebook or online forums.
Yeah, at least not until you're maybe, I don't know how old, but let's just say, you know, drawing on neuroscience and stuff like that. Maybe when you're 35, 40, 50, because then you already have cemented a strong base of knowledge, like models in your head. And then you can use that to kind of, for example, go into Twitter or internet or the news, and you can just see where people are being stupid because you have these patterns in your head. But most people who are young don't have the patterns, and they need to gain the patterns. And the way to gain the patterns is to read deep information.
Exactly. You need to know how to use different news sources and different information sources. And internet and social media, they can be tremendously good at providing contrary sources. They can also be sources of trends and fads, things to either latch onto or counter. I think mostly they are sources for countermeasures.
Okay.
All right. And we do have quite a few book recommendations here, and we also have links to even more book recommendations from things that both you and I have read. But we'll go through them last in this episode.
Yes. Let's move on to step number 3, and that is to find a strategy that suits you, refine it, and stress test it. So what does that mean, Mikael?
First of all, emphasis on a strategy that suits you. There are hundreds of viable strategies. And the difficult thing here is to find a strategy that is suited to your own personality and your own traits and specific quirks. So what you need to do is formulate a strategy that you can actually follow. And once you have a strategy that you can prove to yourself that you actually adhere to, then you're supposed to start refining it. You can refine it in several ways. One is you start trying it out and you weed out whatever is not working, and you put more money into parts of it that actually works. And another way, which is definitely preferred, is to try the strategy against other people. Make sure you get input from objective, intelligent people.
Okay, so one thing there, when you say to track whether it's working or not, how do you track it? What's a good way to track it?
Before every trade, you should write down why you make the investment. And the reasons why you make it, they must be stated in a way that you can actually evaluate the trade afterwards. So you know whether it performed as it should because you were right, or if it performed as it should because you just had luck, and vice versa on the downside.
Right, so it's kind of like making a hypothesis in scientific terms.
Yeah, let's make this a little bit more tangible.
Yeah.
Let's say you buy stocks in the car company Ford, and you state that I buy Ford at a price earnings ratio of 10, and I expect profit to increase by 20% in 2 years' time, and I expect to be still able to sell the stock at a price earnings ratio of 10. And that would give me a 20% return over 2 years. And after 2 years, if, let's say, the stock is up 20%, but profit hasn't moved anywhere. So what happened there? Yeah, sure, you made 20% on the stock, but it wasn't for the reason you stated. Profits were flat, but valuation increased by 20%. So that's actually a trade where your strategy didn't work.
Right. So in that case, it could have been that there's just more, it's just inflation of money or money printing, or, for example, I don't know, maybe some sort of herd thing where people start liking the stock more.
Yeah, it could be just about anything. It definitely, at least, wasn't what you were expecting. You were expecting profit to rise because of, maybe you could state those factors as well, why you thought profits were about to rise. But you were wrong. That's just a fact.
All right, so like a brief recap. You have some sort of trading journal or somewhere where you write this down. Then you make a hypothesis that you can easily validate later, maybe set a reminder to check it later. And then then you check upon it. I think it's funny with investing because it's so immensely complex and there are so many confusing things. And one of the things that's most confusing is that you have all these different investing philosophies. Everything from the sit on your ass investing, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger investing, which obviously suits you if you have the temperament for it. And then on the other hand, you have the, you know, trading, social media trading things. Then you have technical analysis, you have fundamental analysis, and you have all these different terms.
And that's exactly why it's so important to keep a trade journal and try to narrow it down to make your strategy laser focused and actually to make it possible at all to actually evaluate the strategy. Because if you just do more or less anything and just shoot from the hip, you can't evaluate it, and then you can't refine it, and then it can't get better, and your strategy can't even evolve because it's just a fog.
Yeah, that's probably the most difficult part, to know or not know how sure you are.
Let's move on to number four. This is pretty important. Mm-hmm. You should use real money. And I understand that this is double-edged. This is a double-edged sword, because some people say you should be very careful and do a lot of practice and use demo accounts before you use real money. Sure, that's fine and dandy. You should prepare and you should think through your strategy a lot and make sure you have something that you're comfortable with before trading. But until you start trading with real money, you can't really evaluate your own psychology, because it's only when there is real money on the line that most people actually feel the psychology and have something to evaluate.
That's a good point. And I think you can draw a parallel in many other fields, like, you know, becoming an author or a writer, a professional one, or becoming an entrepreneur of some sort. You can't go to school to learn those things. Or, well, I suppose you can, but the success rate is not going to be very high. Basically, everyone who becomes one of those things is self-taught.
There is an acronym that's called TINA. There is no alternative. And that usually refers to investing in stocks, where stocks is the only alternative. That is completely wrong, of course. But there really is no alternative to using real money when investing if you want to learn about your own psyche.
And you recommend the book Tao of Capital, correct?
It has quite a few important lessons, where one of them is to learn how to take stop losses.
Right, you want to like psychologically recoup the loss.
Mm. And then you start taking too much risk, and you double the risk, and you double the risk again, and you think that you really have to get back to zero, but you'll get back to the wrong zero.
Yeah, it's similar to poker or playing roulette.
When your strategy is working, then you should start scaling up. Yeah. Your investments. But when you're losing, you should scale down your investments. But people tend to do quite exactly the opposite.
It's a very good rule. Okay. Shall we go on to the final rule?
This is that you're never done. Markets change all the time. This is perfectly depicted in the book More Money Than God, that goes through the evolution of hedge funds. And it shows how there are different loopholes in the market at different times, and they keep getting closed by intelligent investors. And if you don't evolve with the markets and keep changing your strategy just a little bit, just enough, and stay on your toes and constantly learn and constantly tweak your own algorithms, then you will be left behind.
Yeah, so you have to be a continual learner then.
Yes, and you need to be that in life. And you need to be that in this competitive industry.
You said that there are always alternatives, and you can think about different things, like geography, different parts of the value chain, or, you know, whether you can invest in a company or an asset based in different countries or not. You know, you don't have to buy the whole international company. You can maybe buy a local franchise of it if you just want to get a selective part of it. Things like that. We should make another episode about that.
Mm. And think about things like you really should look outside your domestic market.
Yeah, I think that's a great advice for life in general, to look broader and not to be limited by the first thing that comes to mind.
Just imagine staying in your home city for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's a great parallel. Yeah. All right, so moving on to the books then. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Margin of Safety with Seth Klarman. You can't find it for sale, but you actually can find it for free on the internet. And if you can't find the entire PDF for free, it is there if you look closely enough. But there are a few good summaries. So look for the 30 things I learned from Margin of Safety or something like that. It's a very good summary of the most important lessons.
Right. And the most important thing is, of course, the margin of safety, that the price is the most important thing.
It's a very pedagogical book, and it has a few very valuable rules of thumb, and it points you in the right direction and at what key ratios to look for when evaluating companies.
Yeah, and this is, by the way, this is the linchpin in Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger's investing strategy, that's basically what they do. They're super conservative, and they never want to buy something unless it's very cheap.
Yes. All right, moving on to the second book. It's called Reminiscences of a Stock Operator. It's more or less a biography about an investor who started out as an errand boy and then moved on to technical analysis, fundamental analysis, macro investing, and even taking things like corners in the commodity markets. For a while, he had a commodity corner in cotton, I think it was. Yes.
I read this book. I didn't read it page for page because it's very, very trader specific, I think. But it has a very big focus on psychology. And my two takeaways, big takeaways from this book was, first of all, just how important it is to hone your expert pattern recognition and, like, quote unquote, trading intuition over the years, doing what basically you were saying before, to, you know, make decisions, take risk with real money over time and learn from it over a very long period of time. And then the other thing, the really big idea that I got from it was that probably the most important thing is timing. And it's very easy to make money in a bull market, but it's quite hard to make money when it's going bad.
Yes, and I think one more thing, to never go all in, because there are always things you don't know and you can't control. And if you go all in, then sooner or later, you're almost doomed to lose it all as well. And then you can't come back. The third book, it's The Most Important Thing with Howard Marks. Howard Marks talks about risk from like 20 different perspectives.
Yeah, so we have more books too, and I've read most of them on your recommendation or borrowed them from your library here. But I think this one, The Most Important Thing, that was for me the best one that I read. I think it covers most things that are important about investing. I'm not a pro at it, but I've read a lot about it, and I think I have a decent sense about the different takes on it and ideas on it and so forth. And I think this is the best book. If I had to just read one book about investing, it would be this one.
How many of the books do you think we should mention and go through? We have The Black Swan here.
That's also a good one, but it's not really investing specific. I mean, Taleb just has a bunch of funny stories and interesting historical anecdotes about how dangerous it is to overestimate how sure you are in certain situations. I think that's the big takeaway.
Yeah.
I don't think that's investing specific.
No, it basically says that don't go all in, and things can happen.
Yeah, and build your life so that you can benefit from serendipity and luck.
Mm. Then we have The Great Crash. It's also a little bit peripheral. It's the true story of what happened during the great stock market crash in the 1930s.
Yeah, I think this is a great book because so many people now are not at all prepared for what could happen if we have a crash and what will happen. This is a very good book to read about what the climate might be like, and it's also a good book to kind of hone your spider sense of stuff that's happening in a bubble. And the biggest takeaway, I think, is the word febeslement, which is the money that you're not seeing. It's hidden money in the economy. And when the economy crashes, like a house of cards, then the thing that's causing that house of cards to fall down is the amount of money that no one knew was in circulation, that didn't exist. So it's fake money. And when the fake money goes away, a lot of people are wiped out. And then you can start a dangerous chain effect.
The next book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. This is really a macro economy book and not at all trading related. But if you're going to be a fundamental investor, also leaning towards macroeconomic investing, this is a very good book to start with in order to learn how the economy is actually made up from just ordinary people interacting.
Yeah, I borrowed this book from you when we first met, and my big takeaway that I remember is that an economy is based on production, not consumption. And you can't consume without people producing, which a lot of politicians believe.
And then we have The Death of Money and The New Case for Gold by James Rickards.
These I have not read.
Mm, they are very convincing books regarding an alternative to stocks and the insurance element of owning gold, in particular physical gold. This is something that Martin Sundqvist, that we interviewed several episodes back, is very interested in. And both he and I, we are involved in the same private gold company. And reading these books, if you do read these books, you would probably come knocking my door and wanting in on the private gold company. they're very convincing and maybe too convincing, but nevertheless, they make a very good statement and open your eyes for an alternative to stocks and how important gold might be to evade whatever measures governments might take in the turbulence that I think is coming.
Okay.
All right, let's take a final book, and it's Fed Up by Danielle DiMartino Booth. And she goes through the inner workings of the Federal Reserve, that is the central bank of the United States.
And what does she say?
Before reading this book, I was convinced that central bankers were quite intelligent, very knowledgeable, but pretty evil. But after reading this book, I'm completely convinced now instead that they're just stupid, myopic academics, completely clueless.
So it's like Hanlon's razor.
Yes.
Don't attribute malice to stupidity.
That's quite an eye-opener, and it's both hilarious and instructive in very many ways, and I couldn't recommend it more.
I think we should also mention your book.
It's the 50 rules that I extracted from my 15 years at Futurist, the European hedge fund of the decade. And I've also boiled these 50 down to 12 even more laser-focused traits that I think an investor should focus on or should have. And I call these the art of sprezzatura, T-A-O-S. So it's like Tao.
Right, and that goes back to what we were talking about before in rule number 3, that is to find a strategy that suits you based on your temperament and characteristics and strength.
Exactly. So it's the combination of finding the right strategy and mastering your own psyche. So I definitely think you should check it out.
All right. That's it then. Let's do a summary of the 5 rules.
Yeah. So 1, psychology is more important than maths.
And 2, you should read books and insightful articles about investing, not testosterone dripping people on forums.
3, find a strategy that suits you.
4, use real money because it's the only way to truly stress test your emotions and see if it's a real fit for you.
And 5, create a feedback loop of continuous improvement. You need to be a constant learner, so your work as an investor is never done. A bonus tip. This is not easy. It's not meant to be easy. It's very difficult to master your psychology. It's very difficult and audacious to compete with hundreds of thousands of eager and well-educated financial professionals out there. So it's not easy. Anybody who says it is easy is clueless.
All right, then finally, a lot of the stuff that we talked about today comes from one of Mikael's most popular website articles. And we'll post a link to this article if you want to read it, to, of course, get a recap of all the books, for example, and many more books. And we have a link to this in the description. And then finally, don't forget to subscribe to futureskillspodcast.com. And there's a link to that in the description, too.
Great. Thank you for today.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and see you next time.